So what pet did he pick? It doesn't say, does it? Ah, what in the world? What pet would you pick? Cat, yeah. I've always, my wife is deathly allergic to most pets, but if I could choose, I've always wanted a rabbit that's house trained. They could just run around the house like a cat and get in the litter and everything. So this book is about making choices, right? And the kids, this is a classic situation when you tell your kid, you know, you can buy one Hot Wheels car, I'll pay for it. And they like come back with five and they're like, no, I said one. And then they like, you know, work on it and it gets down to two. And they hope that like you're going to resolve that tension for them and say, oh, that's okay, I'll buy both of them for you. But that's part of what it is that we do as parents is we help our kids learn to choose, because life is made up of tons of choices, right? If you make a choice, one choice every minute, and I think that's probably fair to say that we at least make a choice every minute, you end up over a 72-year life, you end up making 25 million choices. 25 million choices. Now, we probably make more than one choice a minute, don't we? If you make one choice a second, you end up with 1.5 billion choices. 1.5 billion choices. Life is made up of choosing, and oftentimes it's choosing just one. One pet, one toy, one school, one hobby, one sport, hopefully one wife or husband, one God. The life is made up of choosing. By the time my youngest, Sam, graduates from college, I will be 60 years old, and I will have spent 27 years helping to train my children for the choices that they make. The choices that they make. That's what I want to talk about today. And I have a dream when it comes to my kids. That dream is that I want my children, I want Sam and Micah, to have the wisdom and courage to make faithful choices. This is a big vision. This is a big deal, because what's the opposite? Unfaithful choices, right? Unfaithful choices blow up people's lives. Unfaithful choices blow up your own life. Faithful choices build people up. Faithful choices build into people and situations. Faithful choices give back to other people. Today we're starting this new series called Parenting Through the Proverbs, from Solomon to Seuss. We're going to look throughout this whole series at the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs is the book in the Bible that is traditionally attributed to King Solomon. And it's about King Solomon's wisdom. And so it's just like lots and lots of Proverbs. There's all kinds of wisdom in there. Wisdom for all kinds of situations in life, for your job, for economics, for parenting, and everything else in between. We're also going to take a look at Dr. Seuss a little bit through this. And Dr. Seuss has been in the news lately. I don't know if any of you have been following it for not the best of reasons. Dr. Seuss, apparently, his pen name is Dr. Seuss, but he was Ted Geisel. That's his sort of given name. And Ted Geisel, before he was Dr. Seuss, did cartoons and illustrations, and it turns out that many of those cartoons and illustrations were racist in nature. And so Dr. Seuss Museum has just opened somewhere, and there was kind of a big brouhaha about a particular illustration that was on the wall that was the way that Dr. Seuss kind of had a very stereotypically racist cartoon of a particular person. And three children's authors who were going to be at the museum, when they saw that was part of the mural, pulled out. And they wrote this. It was interesting. I read their letter this week. They said, "The career of Ted Geisel writing as Dr. Seuss is a story of growth from accepting the baser racial impulses that work with work. From accepting the baser racial stereotypes of the times in his early career to challenging those divisive impulses with work that delighted his readers and changed the times." So there's kind of a transformation that happened from Ted Geisel to Dr. Seuss, where later on his work tended to be more inclusive and that sort of thing. And it's that sort of the spirit of that change and that wisdom that we're looking into Dr. Seuss for, because he actually wrote, like, it's not so much where you begin that matters, it's where you end, right? And so we look to the wisdom of making choices. Those are the kind of choices that I want my kids to make, because we're all making choices when we start out that are sort of tapping into those baser impulses, but moving towards change. Throughout this series, we're going to take a look at different seasons of a kid's life. Age 0 to 5, the discipline years. Ages 6 to 11, the training years. 12 to 18, the coaching years. And 18 and over, the friendship years, or at least hopefully the friendship years. And we have a different person who's going to teach on each one of those. And so the way that our teaching schedule works, we have a team of teachers. I'm not the only one who does it. It's not going to necessarily be in order. So we're actually going to start today with the training years. So I'm going to talk to you today about ages 6 to 11. Psychologists call this middle childhood. And when I think about training, there's a proverb that comes immediately to my mind. Train a child in the right way, and when old, they will not stray. Train a child in the right way, and when old, they will not stray. Now, this is wisdom. This is one of the things that's important to understand about wisdom books. This is what generally happens, but not what always happens, right? Because you all know parents who did an awesome job training their children, and then when they were old, they did stray. But generally speaking, you do the right thing in training your kids, it's going to stick with them. I suspect you will have some questions through this series and through the message today. And so each week in the series, we're going to do text Q&A. And you'll see at the bottom of the screen, there's a phone number, 507-788-3642. And you can text questions in at any point throughout the message today. And John is going to come back up. He's monitoring those questions, and he will put me on the hot seat. So you can say, Tom, that's a bunch of hot air. Answer this question. All right. You ready, John? Be watching it. Okay. If you are here today through this or throughout this whole month, you may wonder, I don't have any kids. What does this have to do with me? And here's something I want you to know. If you are part of Sycamore Creek, if you are part of a faith community, then you have kids. You have my kids. You have the Lalone's kids. You have John's kids. Tara's got one that she's cooking in the oven right now. You've got Tara's future baby. You've got Samantha and the teens in our church. You've got kids. You've got my kids. You are part of what is helping raise my children. Speaking of that, this morning, my wife is over at Potterville campus, and she's doing the teaching there. I'm here. So we couldn't be parents this morning. So what did we do? One of you came over to our house this morning and watched our kids for us. Alice McKinstry has been watching our kids through the morning so that we could be here. Because Alice is part of training our kids. You are part of your training our kids here at Sycamore Creek. So what do we want to train our kids for? And I think about immediately, you think about schooling and training in the three R's, right? Reading, writing, arithmetic. But that's not really, those are all good things, but that's not what we're about here at the church. We want to train in three other R's: responsibility, relationships, and reliance upon God. So let's dive into each one. I have a dream for my kids. I want my children to be faithful in responsibility. One of the Proverbs says this, like billowing clouds that bring no rain is the person who talks big but never produces. Right? It's easy to talk, have big dreams, but to not have the responsibility to follow through with it. Yesterday was some crazy rain, wasn't it? But if all of those clouds and all that wind would have produced nothing, it would have been like somebody who talks big but takes no responsibility. My kids love dump trucks. We have this great sandbox on our back deck. But you know what? They're really not interested in that sandbox. They want to play out in the patch of dirt out in our front yard. And they've always got trucks and dump trucks. And you think about a dump truck. A dump truck carries a load. It has a kind of responsibility to get the load from one place to another. And if you showed up without that load, but you expected to still get paid, that'd be sort of ridiculous, wouldn't it? I have a dream for my kids to carry responsibility the way that a dump truck carries a load. But I have an even bigger dream than that. I want them to be a Mack truck that carries dump trucks. Like, Now you're talking about like somebody who can carry a load of responsibility and can help carry other people's loads as well. Now, many of us, though, are, this is sort of like, this is a metaphor for life, right? And so whether you have kids or not, some of us, our dreams are being eaten, like, for lunch, or our irresponsibility is eating our dreams for lunch. Because this is not what our life looks like. We can't carry a dump truck. We're a Mack truck that's carrying a little toy dump truck. We've got an adult size responsibility and a toy size commitment to actually following through on it. So the next step I want to talk to you about for this training and responsibility, I think a really clear way to do that is to give your children clear chores and stick with it. Now, the stick with it is your part of the responsibility, right? Like, David, if you give your kids chores, you've got to have the responsibility to follow through with it, right? So you've got to play out some sort of responsibility. Now, grandparents, I know that you think your job is to spoil your grandkids, but it probably wouldn't be bad to have some chores that even they do at your house. I'm talking as a parent, right, to my grandparents. Maybe someday if I'm a grandparent, I'll have something different to say up here today. But grandparents, how can kids do something at your house? I did a bit of research on what families, how they spend their times. Moms spend 21 hours doing paid work, 18 hours doing housework, and 14 hours doing childcare. This is like the averages across the U.S. Dads spend 37 hours doing paid work, 10 hours doing housework, and 7 hours doing childcare. Kids, on the other hand, spend 3 hours on housework and 14 hours watching television. There's something that we're training our kids to do in that moment, right, with those numbers. We're saying your job in life is to be entertained, not to be creative, not to be a sort of producer, not to be a responsible partner of the family. In your program today, there's, you know, this is like the notes that you can always take notes on. If you flip it over on the back, there's a list from MSU Extension of age-appropriate chores for kids, depending on what age they are. And as you look through that list, you think about, how would I get my kids to do these things? One of the ways to do that is to do it together. Oftentimes, when I'm cleaning up the kitchen after dinner, while I'm cleaning up the kitchen, the kids are putting the dishes away. We're doing it together. It's not like I'm sitting over in my lazy boy chair while my kids are doing chores. We do it together. I think as well there's a way that kids love predictability, right? They love the rhythms. So there's a timing component of chores. If you just sort of spontaneously tell a kid, hey, it's time to go put the dishes away right now, the likelihood they're going to like go to that with a willingness is pretty slim. But if it's something that happens every day after dinner, they build it into their, like, that's what they just expect. My kids know that pretty much after a meal, there's probably dishes to be put away if the dishwasher's been run. Make chores fun. Put some music on. Be silly. Turn it into a game. The Proverbs say, despite the desires, the lazy will come to ruin, for their hands refuse to work. Let's make sure our kids don't come to ruin because their hands refuse to work. I want my children to be faithful in responsibilities, and that's got to grow over time, right? Like my six-year-old, I can't say, hey, go out and mow the yard for me. Now, when he gets to sixth grade, I probably can. But it's got to be age appropriate. I want my children to be faithful in responsibility. The second dream that I have for my kids is I want my children to be faithful in relationships. Now, here's what you're going to find as we talk about this. I'm not just talking about their friendships with other kids. What I'm going to talk about actually is their relationship with you as parents and grandparents. Because what you're going to find is that the character of your relationship with your kids is going to be replicated in their relationship with their friends. The Proverbs say, walk with the wise and become wise, associate with fools and get in trouble. Is your house characterized more by wisdom or foolishness? I have a friend who is a child psychologist at Duke, and I asked Bill, I said, Bill, will you recommend a book to me that like is an overview of all of the psychological research on parenting and sort of child development? And he recommended this book to me, The Handbook of Parenting. Now, let me say, this is not a book I'm going to recommend to you, okay? This is, this is volume one of like six volumes. And he sent me a copy. This is one of those books where like every single sentence has a footnote, and it references like one or more pieces of psychological research. There are no opinions in this book. There's no opinions about child rearing. It is every statement, every assertion is based on psychological research of one or more studies over the last 30 years. And I waded through this, okay? It was a good book, but I waded it through you. And as a public service to you, I have boiled it down to 6 points, all right, when it comes to relationships, or 5 points. Faithful relationships, or psychologists refer to this as pro-social. You can think of as the opposite of antisocial. Like, we don't want our kids to be antisocial. We want them to be pro-social. So faithful relationships. The first one is affectionate parenting. So let me read this to you again. These are statements from this book. These are not my opinions. There's like one or more psychological studies that back up each one of these statements. Harsh parental discipline repeatedly has been associated with the likelihood of antisocially aggressive behavior. Guess what happens? If you are harsh with your kids, then they learn to be harsh with other people. I mean, that seems like a big duh. You don't have to do like fund a big psychological research to do that. But the practice of it is where it's really hard. I used to think that my dad yelled and cursed at us a lot when we were kids. But then I became a parent, and I realized my dad barely ever yelled and cursed at us, because I want to yell and curse at my kids just about every single day. I'm just being human with you here, okay? Over the last several years, I've done and said some stupid stuff with my kids, and I had one time where I thought, this just can't continue. I can't continue doing this. And I sat down with some people that were important to me in my small group, and I said, help me figure out how to not yell at my kids. And I came up with this crazy idea, okay? I thought, why don't I yell at Jeremy? Why don't I yell at my staff? Why don't I yell at all of you? What's the difference? And the difference is, at least in my mind, I'm getting paid to be patient with you, okay? You all pay your pastor to be patient with you and to not yell at you. I thought, what would happen if I started to pay myself to not yell at my kids? And so I decided, you know what? At the end of every day, if I haven't yelled at my kids, I'm going to put a dollar in Daddy's Happy Bank. Okay? And guess what? I'm on a 150-day streak of not yelling at my kids. Because I don't want my kids to learn anger from me and replicate that in their relationships with other kids, okay? The relationship they have with us. Now, let me tell you, if you're not a parent in here, you help us parents do this. It was my small group. It's like, it's other people who said, Tom, you can't be harsh with your kids. We got to figure this thing out. And so you create a community that helps parents do that, to be affectionate to their kids. The second one here was fully invested same-gender parent. Now, this sounds kind of controversial, but let me read to you the research, okay? Pro-social behaviors like self-confidence, assertiveness, and effectiveness with other children are correlated with a history of affection from both parents and dominance from the same gender parent. So both parents are important here. Moms and dads are both important. But guess what? Moms are especially important with girls, and dads are especially important with boys. Now, most of us probably would not say that our moms were passive slacker moms. Anybody want to? Okay. Very few of us, all right? So that's probably what I'm going to speak to the dads here just for a minute. Dads, don't be passive dads. Especially with your boys. Spend time with them. Invest in them. I try to spend one-on-one time with each of my boys once a week. So I spend a lot of time with them together. But once a week, they get time with Dad. It's like, we call it, it's Daddy Sam time and Daddy Micah time. And we just go out, just the two of us, and we hang out together. Dads, don't be passive. Invest fully in your boys. Moms, invest fully in your girls. Invest in both of your parents, both of your kids, but especially with those that are the same gender. The third one here is harmonious marriage. Now let me read to you. The family environment, including parents' marital conflict and parental disagreement on child-rearing standards and practices, has been linked to children's antisocial tendencies and poor relationships with peers. I'm not giving you my opinion here, remember? This is like one or more pieces of psychological study that back up that assertion. Do you notice a theme going on? Here's the theme. Parents' relationships with their kids have a huge impact, a big impact, on kids' relationships with other kids. They learn wisdom from you, or they learn foolishness from you as a parent. So, in the list of my priorities in my life, number one, I am a follower of Jesus. Number two, I am a husband. Number three, I am a dad. Because each of my boys is going to grow up and leave me for somebody else. But my wife is going to be with me for the rest of my life. So ditch your kids sometimes. It's okay to ditch your kids and to go hang out as a couple. In fact, those of you, again, who don't have kids, this is one place where you can really come into play. Because we can't ditch our kids and leave our kids at our home, although I've thought about that. All right? We need some help here. Help us watch our kids so that we can spend some time together. The fourth one, little screen time. Let me read this to you. Children who spend relatively small amounts of time with television. How many hours did kids spend on television on average? 14, okay? I wouldn't call that relatively little time with television. Those are averages. So kids who spend relatively small amounts of time with television and other electronic media generally show fewer antisocial behaviors. Now, my kids haven't started asking me yet for a phone, but I'm sure that's going to come up, right? Fairly soon. And this is where, like, they're going to say to me, but everybody's got one. And what am I going to say? I'm going to say, well, we're weird, okay? We're weird. And it's going to feel like I'm being more restrictive than every other parent in that moment. Now, let me read to you something if you're going to go down this road with me here, okay? And this is based in psychological research. Optimal child-rearing practices frequently include somewhat more restrictiveness than is usually implied by North American findings. It's okay to be more restrictive with your kids than the culture wants them to be. And psychological studies have found that they tend to be more faithful in their relationships and pro-social behaviors than otherwise. This is especially where the church can come in, right? Because if John and Tara and the Lones and the Newmans and the Welshes are also being a little more restrictive than the culture as a whole, then I've got some backup here, okay? I can say, well, Talia doesn't have a phone. Do you have a name for your baby yet? No? Okay. The baby in the oven doesn't have a phone yet. You know, it's like... we can support each other and create a kind of culture that is going against the streams of the culture as a whole. Together we can do this. There's a book that I want to recommend to you. It's called The Tech Wise Family. I read this recently. I read it for myself because I wanted to be prepared and begin thinking about this. I loved this book so much. We're going to do a series on it next year. But I put some copies in the micro bookstore because I didn't want to wait. Like, this is too good of stuff. But I'm gonna give you the punchline ahead of time, okay? The punchline is how you spend time with your electronics is how your kids will learn to spend time with your electronics. They watch and they learn. The fifth thing was monitored time away. Again, negative effects are most likely when children on their own are not monitored regularly and when they are free to spend time away from home with peers. A couple of months ago, there was a little bit older boy who came. He's in our neighborhood. He came down and he played with our boys in our front yard. Totally fine. We loved that. It was great. But then he came up to Sarah and he said, Micah's going to come down to my house to see this toy that I have. And Sarah was like, She didn't really say it that way, but, you know, that was what she was thinking. And she did say, for Micah to go down to your house, I was amazed, like, this kid comes and tells an adult what's happening. But Sarah said, for Micah to go down to your house, I would need to meet your parents. And he said, well, my parents aren't going to come down here. And I said, well, then you'll just have to stay here and play. Because this is not about helicopter parenting, okay? This is about knowing where your kids are and what they're doing and who's in charge. And sometimes I think this is where electronics can give us a false sense of monitoring. Like, just because your kid has a phone doesn't mean that, and you can call them and say, how are you doing? Or they can call you. You can't give up your responsibility to be a parent to an electronic device. Monitor your kids. This is, again, this is psychological research. This is not just my opinion. All right, so I want my boys to be the primary influencer on their friends of giving good advice rather than the one that's being led astray. I want my kids to have faithful relationships. So the next step, evaluate your child's relationships. Here's the third dream I have for my kids. I want my children to be faithful in reliance upon God. In reliance upon God. One thing I forgot to mention about the relationships, we're doing a screening today, or there's a group that's meeting here at our church, of a documentary called Wounded Places. And it's really about how children get wounded and how we can help them. And I think when it comes to that relationships, that might be something you want to stick around for after the service today. But when it comes to reliance upon God, the Proverbs say, fear of the Lord is the foundation of true knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Now, this word fear trips us up. This is not like you went to a haunted house and God jumped out at you like the boogeyman, okay? It's not like you are afraid of God. Fear is like a healthy respect. There's an electrician in our church. His name is John Reich. And I've talked to John several times. He's had several friends who have died from electrocution because in a moment they stopped respecting the thing they were working with. And so John, who's an electrician, who certainly understands the value and power of electricity, also has a healthy respect for it. There's another book that I put in the bookstore, micro bookstore back there, called Revolutionary Parenting. George Barna looked at kids or young adults who are in their 20s who are still actively involved in the church, and he said, that's kind of unusual. What did their parents do to help them get to that point? So he interviewed those 20-year-olds, and then he interviewed the parents. And he found out some sort of interesting components of this. One is that this really boils down to that faith is caught more than it's taught. Again, your kids are going to pick it up from you. What is your faith like? Where is your heart at? Where are your practices? Do your kids ever walk in on you while you're praying? Do they ever walk in on you while you're reading the Bible? Do they see these things at home? Do you teach them at home? See, a lot of people rely on what's happening up in Kids Creek or the children's program of a church to be the primary place where kids learn about faith. But I always tell parents, listen, David, you are your kid's first pastor, not me. They spend more time with you than they do with me. And grandparents, you are your kids' associate pastors, okay? You spend way more time with your grandkids than I ever will or our Kids Creek team ever will. When I was growing up, I used to regularly, like, I'd go in the morning into my mom's room, like, seeking her out. And there she would be sitting in this chair that she'd sit in next to her bed, and her Bible was out on her lap, and she was reading it. I knew that this meant something to my mom. Now, my kids would come in and they'd find me looking at my cell phone, and they wouldn't know whether, like, I'm reading my Bible on the cell phone or whether I'm just checking up on social media. And this also, I think another component of this is prayer. Do you pray for your kids? I try to be home four nights a week, but three nights a week as a pastor, I'm usually away in some capacity or another. And my kids know that when I come home and they're asleep, that I go in and pray for them. Because I say, before I leave that day, I say, what is Daddy going to do when he comes home and you're already asleep? And they say, you're going to pray for us. And I go in, they're in bunk beds, so I get I'm up here like with Micah, and I pray, God, I put my hand on his head. And I pray, God, help me be the kind of dad that Micah needs to become the man that you've called him and created him to be. And then I get down on my knees. I got to get down on my knees for Sam for more than one reason, all right? And I put my hand on Sam's head, and I pray, God, use all of this will and energy and point it towards good and justice in the world, okay? And help me be the kind of dad that will form that out of this little boy. And then I say, God, help my church, help me. I pray for my kids. But we also pray together. And we read the Bible together. In fact, if you're a Kids Creek parent, we have these little memorization cards for different verses. There's one verse a month. You can take home, we put them on our table. And just at dinner, we work on memorizing those verses with Kids Creek. That's a way that we partner with you as parents. Do you attend worship together regularly? Now, here's one thing I see. This is a regular struggle. And as parents get kids get older, there's this constant pull to extracurricular activities. And I won't say that, like, you shouldn't ever skip on Sunday morning and go do something else. Because we offer Monday night, right? But are you always, is the something else always winning out? And if it's always winning out, if coming to worship together is not sometimes winning out, then you're training your kids to say, this is always a secondary priority. I want my kids to be faithful in reliance upon God. So the next step, pick a family faith practice and begin it this week. Pick a family faith practice and begin it this week. I want my children to be faithful in responsibility and relationships and in reliance upon God. As we come to the communion table today, I'm going to need those four helpers that John mentioned. And if you're willing to do that, you can step to the back and the ushers will help you get ready. Tara's coming up to help me at the table because I'm a bit sick today, actually, and I didn't want to pass that on to all of you. But when we come to this table, we basically are saying, listen, we're doing this together as a community. You're raising my kids. I'm raising your kids. We're helping our kids make faithful choices together. On the night before Jesus gave himself up for us, he gathered his closest friends in a room, and he took the bread that was at the table there, and he gave thanks to you, God, for the bread. And he gave it to his friends, and he said, eat, this is my body, which is given for you. Now, when the meal was over, he took a cup, and he gave thanks to you, God. And he gave it to his friends, and he said, drink from this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, poured out for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. As often as you drink it, remember me. And so, God, send your Holy Spirit on us gathered here together as a community, and on this bread and on this cup, and make it be for us the body of Christ and the blood of Christ, that we might train our children together and all the kids that we come in contact with in the grace and love and mercy of your Son, Jesus. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and all who agreed said, amen. I'm going to invite those who would help serve communion to please come forward. If you are a guest here today, you may wonder, can I receive communion if I'm not a member? And the answer is, if you look in your heart and find in your heart a desire to live at peace with God and a desire to live at peace with those around you, then you're welcome to come and receive communion. When you come forward, there'll be a station here in the front, and there'll be a station in the back. When you come forward, say your name to the person who's holding the bread, And they'll tear off a piece of bread and give it to you. They'll say, this is the body of Christ given for you. And then step to the person who's holding the cup. Say your name to that person, especially Marion, because she can't see you. And Marion will say, this is the blood of Christ that's shed for you. And you will dip the bread in the cup. Friends, the table has been set. Come as you're ready.